Thriftaccounting.com. Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show on KentBusinessRadio.co.uk on this Tuesday, the 8th of December, with me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely Shirley Mansfield. That was Reverend Blue Jeans, as picked by Alex Waterston, back in his 60s mode there. Nice. Sweet. And we were just saying we haven't heard those for a long time.
No.
That was really good.
I don't remember them first time round.
Really nice. I'll tell you what we've got coming up now, for those of you that remember, we do a monthly series in conjunction with the University of Kent Business School and Think Associates, Big Associates, I do beg your pardon, Big Associates. And we have been exploring the 10 BIG, Business Improvement and Growth Traits, coming out of the research data that the University of Kent have found. And this week we are on trait number 8, I believe, mm-hmm. In which Dr. Simon Raby and Len... whoa, blimey, that's a first.
What's the matter?
I forgot his name.
And Simon Raby.
I've been practising his pronunciation for ages. It's Dr. Len Nanjab. And Dr. Simon Raby, and they are going to be talking about the systemizer, but they're going to be talking about it down the line from Canada.
Excellent.
So,
global.
Yeah. So over to Simon, really.
Okay. Thanks, Paul, for the introduction. That's very kind of you, and it's great to be back on the show today. And we're going to explore one particular characteristic of the Big Ten, which we'll come on to in a second. But let's talk a little bit about the Big Ten. The reason why we're here is that the research from the University of Kent and Kent Business School has basically found 10 key characteristics that define success within small and medium-sized enterprises. And in doing so, we've been, through the last few radio shows, exploring, well, what is it that these 10 characteristics mean? So we've been going through them one by one, and today we're going to explore the systemizer. The systemizer in particular is about the practices, processes, systems within an organisation that enable it to work and function effectively. And it isn't about bringing in new systems and structures and making things overly bureaucratic or having lots of paperwork everywhere. This is about bringing in systems and structures that are actually going to be effective within an organisation and enable it to perform better in the future, grow, build, and yes, excel. So that's what we're going to explore. Why is it important? Well, it's important for a number of reasons, but in particular that we as business owners, as entrepreneurs, are looking to scale our businesses, and in doing so we're looking to make them more replicable and predictable, and we want that element of control. So we are trying to infuse control through what we do. But aside to that, we're also having to give up control, because the bigger an organisation gets, the more people get in the way of actually delivering the work. So we have to delegate, we have to let go, and therefore systems and structures are important to ensure that whatever it is that we do is done effectively in the way that we'd want it to be done. I know that when, and I'll introduce Len in a second, who's with us today, and it's great to have Len with us. When we were exploring this initially, this topic of the systemizer, we actually found that it came from two clear perspectives, one from a very people-focused perspective and one from a very process-focused perspective. And we've decided to split this show into two parts, one focused on processes, which we will explore with Jaydeep in the next show, but also this one's going to focus more on the people aspect of systems and structures with Len. So I just want to introduce Len to the show. So welcome, Len.
Thanks very much, Simon. It's great to be here.
And Len's comes from an organisational design background. So Len's an expert in organisational design, particularly in people systems. So he works on the way work needs to be organised. He's worked with organisations across the world, from 200 employees up to 120,000 employees. So he's got a real sense of what works in organisations. He's worked as a consultant, external to organisations, so coming in and providing that fresh thinking, but also within an organisation as a corporate consultant and internal employee, and for the likes of Deloitte, IBM, and now Core International. So, yeah, welcome to the show, Len, and it's great to have you here to explore this topic today.
Thanks, yeah, it's very exciting. So, the first thing I think in terms of the systemizer concept and the systemizer capability that the Big Ten talks about is a very fundamental role and accountability of all managers and all leaders, which is what we would think of as the designer, if not the steward, of the management operating system. And organization design, or your people system, is what we work with leaders to help design. So that's the first thinking, just to make this very tactical for a second, is we're not talking about massively complex systems, but we are talking about the systems which help the work to get done. Right? And organizational structure is a very narrow component of that. And so you think of it more broadly as, okay, what's my management system? What's my operating system for the way we manage getting the work done? Right? And yes, the great conversation with folks like JD around processes as well, though, as, okay, well, those processes still need a management infrastructure around it to get the work done and get the work managed, and that happens to be through people. So the fundamental concept here is, what is the people system that a systemizer has to be aware of, understand, and do something about to get a result that drives the execution of the strategy that you're looking for to achieve, right? And so that's what we think about, that's what we talk about a lot.
So effectively what you're sort of talking about is, how do we organize people, and how do we organize people effectively in order to get the work done in its simplest form? And I think, you know, in a lot of organizations, particularly smaller organizations, my experience is that structures just emerge. Things happen. You know, we employ a new person, we plug them in, we go, we've employed them for that job. You know, that's what they're here to do. But quite often we might not actually consider, well, how does that relate to the rest of the system that we're creating or that has emerged over the past, and inefficiency can then be created. So how is it that we do best organise? You know, what are those principles that we probably need to be thinking about when we're bringing in new people or even reviewing how it is that we get work done?
Yeah, that's fascinating. And that's the primary symptom, actually, that you've described there, is that as organisations grow, they simply add on. And what was originally, you know, a small organization of 5 people to 50 people to 500 people to 5,000 people, the level of complicatedness, not complexity, but actual complicatedness, comes from this thought that, okay, I can just add on, I can bolt on, I can add more, and I can repeat, I can scale, and I can do things in a predictably measurable small patterns. But when you add them all up and you look at it from the big side, things become quite messy and quite hard to manage. And in fact, the work of the top leaders becomes so much involved in the energy of managing an unwieldy system that you need to come back and sort of, how do I redesign all of the parts to get clear on that? And so organizing people in your people system, you know, at the highest level, has these three components of not just structure, and we'll get into structure more specifically in a second, but also your governance processes and your operational rules, right? But in structure overall, you know, the way we think about structure is to start first with the concept of accountability. So what is it that you have accountability for, and then how can that accountability be split up and delegated, right, through a system of delegation of some sort, right? And so from that delegation, you get to have to really get specific about defining roles, or what we would call role clarity. You also need to get very specific about decision-making authority amongst those roles, between those roles. So for example, who actually has the autocratic right to say yes or no to a specific decision within a realm of authority, and who has the right to recommend, and who has the right to, in fact, veto that decision, right? So decision-making rights, in fact, are central to how the work gets done. And ultimately, there's also a very individualistic component to this around commitment. And what I mean about commitment here is a very tactical definition of understanding what the nature of a request is around an accountability, and making a request and then following through on that request. And the nature of request includes, you know, what is it that you want to get done, to what level of quality or detail, and by when. And then the quid pro quo on that is also the resources required to meet the request within those given parameters. So it's very important to get a very good discipline around commitment to say, have you established the quantity, the quality, the time span within which it's expected, the time frame, as well as the resources that will be committed in order to meet that request. And once there's agreement on all four of those things, then and only then do you actually have a commitment that can be held to account, for example.
I mean, what's fascinating for me about that, particularly within smaller organisations, is that kind of unspoken or unwritten agreement. So, you know, when we've come together, we may have worked together for, you know, significant periods of time, and you just understand each other. It's almost like you can second guess the other person that already works in the organisation. And so because of the informality that surrounds that, you then bring in a new person to that system, and they're potentially at sea in terms of what their understanding is about what they need to do. And as a leader, you may not also feel like you need to give time to certain practices which actually may need to ensure that they feel more embedded to the workforce. So that's something that I've noticed with working with organisations. It can be a real challenging thing around how do you best embed and, I guess, help the learning curve for new people that come into organisations.
Yeah, and you see this happen a lot with especially smaller organisations as they move past that tipping point, if you will, above 200 employees, because there's simply not enough capacity to know who's doing what, how they're doing it, and continuously renegotiating all those commitments in a system of more than 200 people. Right, so you get into defining roles, delegating roles, and ultimately what you're talking about is trying to manage trust in the system. How can I trust what I've delegated to get done in a way that's effective so that I know that the commitments are being kept, and then have that cascade through all the different levels. If you're doing it hierarchically or any other kind of structural form, those issues of defining accountability, delegating accountability, and having trust in the system, as well as trust in the people, become a matter of the leader's primary concern. And sometimes leaders get a little bit dismayed in that they really loved working in the business, which would mean doing the operational tactical things, and find their work to be more about working on the business, which is the governance stuff and managing people or just managing the work systems, right? But that comes with growth, and there are some good ways to make that a lot more easy to remember, manage, integrate into your day-to-day work, but still carry out the longer-term growth that you're looking for.
I mean, what you're raising is really important, is around trust. And it's an easy word to use, that we have trust in each other, or I have trust in my own capability in what I do. How is it that you can promote trust, and actually what sort of things can, you know, eat into trust and actually undermine trust, have you found in organisations that you've worked with?
And interestingly, the frame of reference that we come from in terms of the design of work and the design of work systems, the research body that we based on was actually started with the original, that same question. What is it in my working system, my system of people getting work done through other people, creates the conditions for trust? Because that is fundamentally the condition that's needed to get work done. Right? It is not an efficiency thing. It is not just about good, clean processes. It's about clarity around what we can depend on from each other to develop trust. So in fact, it does come back to those three things that I talked about. First of all, understanding what accountability means, and then combining that into sets of accountabilities, which would be a role, so that's role clarity. Then decision-making authorities or rights, if you will. Now, how does decision get made? What's the process of making decisions? And then making specific commitments. So those things are really the fundamental blocks of creating accountability. And accountability in a systemic way creates trust.
And I mean, one of the articles I know that both of us read and have read is the Decision-Driven Organisation, one of the Harvard Business Review articles. And I guess, you know, we had a bit of a debate about that before coming to this conversation today in terms of what is it that we, what are those questions that we ask ourselves in structuring our organisations? And we've spoken today a bit about actually structure can be quite emergent, it can just happen. And that may be fine in the early days, but actually we might need to become more systematic about it. And you've talked about those three principles that, you've just raised there. But actually, you know, the decision-driven organisation is talking about where you need to start is actually what decisions need to be made to get the work done. And therefore, then flowing from that, who needs to make those decisions, who's in the best position, who's best placed to do that, and all the other things that come with that. How do you view that as a process or an approach, I guess, to viewing the way that we should structure organisations?
So I'm still at odds with that perspective. I can understand the good logic of it, to say that, I mean, the first stance is, of course, to understand the strategic direction and the strategy. And then everything else follows. That principle definitely will all hold. So what comes next? Do you think about structure? Do you think about decision-making? Or do you think about operational design to drive your alignment with strategy for execution, right? So the school of thought that says we should think about decisions first is thinking of, I would argue that that's a little bit of a higher order decision-making authority. So, okay, so if our strategy changes to be more customer-focused than cost-focused, right, for example. So now we need to make more decisions, better decisions, and faster decisions about customer. So we actually have to design ourselves around accountabilities for customer insight in order to make decisions for customer need versus making production-based information decision or product information from production to make efficiency-based decisions. And you may not actually be structured to make decisions like that. I totally understand that logic in order to get to better structure. But there's nothing to say that you can't reorder that step to say that our first alignment position will be to understand, okay, how we're designed today to get work done to serve customers better, and then look at the accountabilities and the roles that you need to have, and then decide on what decisions need to be made and what decision authorities need to be done. What you can't skip, though, is that decisions need to be made, and you have to manage that as a part of designing your system.
Fascinating, because, yeah, I mean, as you are raising, strategy is a really important part of this, and there are organizations across the world that pivot and change strategies based upon the market and the competition that they are currently experiencing. So, yeah, one organisation, and particularly we're having this conversation in Calgary, in Canada, and there are organisations that have spent significant proportions of their time looking at operational efficiencies within their system to try and decrease costs. And now there are also other organisations look at more innovative approaches at the top line about, well, actually, how do we, you know, change our strategy? Do we become more customer-focused as opposed to just servants of a process and a system? So that's fascinating about, yeah, strategically, how organisations are performing. I mean, in terms of what we would recommend for people to go off and do, so if there are leaders and entrepreneurs listening to this show at the moment, what would be those three key things that you would recommend to listeners about how you would go about designing a people system, a system to deliver work as it needs to be delivered?
Yeah, so I would say the three key things to designing a people system is to, first of all, start with a central principle of, you know, what drives trust and you know, the delegation of authority or risk. And in designing that, you need to look at very, very specifically and clearly, what is the work that needs to get done, right? So the first thing that I'd recommend is that as you look very clearly at what is the work that needs to be get done, understand the complexity and the nature of that work. And you'll find very clearly, that's actually quite simple to define, but you will see that once you do it from the basis of work, you can then start to group activities of accountability at the right layer or level of management, right? And so there's a common issue when you just grow organically and you keep adding stuff, that you are the, you know, chief strategist as well as bottle washer, right? And you can easily delegate the bottle washing duties, but maybe there's something in between there that you shouldn't give up, and things there that you should give up that you're not willing to or clearly see the connection that you could give up. So the complexity of your accountabilities has to come clear. So that's the first recommendation. Just get very clear on the accountabilities, on what the work is, and then be able to level it on the nature of the work or the level of complexity of each accountability. The second thing then is, if you're thinking about work from what's got to be done and the nature of the work, then you got to really think about, well, how do I know that the people I have in my system have the capability to handle that level of complexity or handle that accountability? And this goes beyond just knowledge, skills, and experience, so domain expertise. This goes into your processing power, an individual's cognitive processing power. Not how smart they are, but how well they use multiple variables all at the same time to solve a problem, to handle a situation, to handle interruptions, right? So those of us who are ADD or ADHD may have an advantage there, but only because we like being interrupted, or we have to be interrupted, or that's the way we learn and operate. But that's not that's more luck than design. But there is a way to manage that and understand who you've got in your shop that can handle these kinds of accountabilities by the nature of its complexity. So that's really just assessment, right? Just assess for that thing. And it's very predictive, by the way, of growth and success. So that gives you sustainability factor, which I will conclude with in a second. And then the third one is getting very crystal clear about the process and managing these accountabilities and capabilities. So managing your roles and managing the talent in those roles, but using a very clear approach to that, which we call three-tier management. And that is about an employee, their manager, and that manager's manager. So there are very specific sets of accountabilities around managing talent and managing the assignment of accountabilities that have to be defined between these three roles, as opposed to just the manager-employee dyad, right? So when you break it out into this three-tier management system, many powerful things happen in the people system that actually generate much higher levels of trust much faster. So those three things, right? Just organize for complexity, assess for the ability to do complexity, and then manage that complexity in a three-tier leveled approach will get you the results that can have a very effective people system.
Fantastic, fascinating, and we could talk about it all day, and I know we've only got 20 minutes, so we're just coming up to time now. I know, Len, something that we will do is share some information after the show, so we're going to form a blog, which we can always point people to extra resources to explore potentially around, you know, three-tier management. What do we really mean by that? Because, again, that's a concept that we could go into and talk about for hours alone as to how you actually approach that. So that's something we're going to do. So watch out for the blog, everyone, from this show. We're also, as the next show, going to be exploring a very process-driven perspective with Jaydeep. Jaydeep's an expert from an operations and supply chain perspective, so we're going to be looking very much at that kind of perspective next. And I just want to obviously thank Len for appearing on the show. It's been great to have you here, so thanks for spending the time and talking to the audience.
Great, thanks very much. It was fun to have this chat.
And look forward to speaking to you again soon. Obviously, you can gain all the information through the Business Bunker website. And Big Insights is the space particularly reserved for everything related to Big. So you can download the mini booklet there to your heart's content. There's also a link to a online video cartoon, and there's a raft and range of different blogs and resources that entrepreneurs and leaders of organizations can get access to. So please do enjoy yourself with that. And should you have any questions, get in touch with us in the future. Thanks very much.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show on this Tuesday, the 8th of December, with me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely Shirley Mansfield. That was Dr. Simon Raby and Len Nanjad over there in Calgary, in Canada, talking on number 8 in our series of BIG 10 top 10 traits of entrepreneurs and business people, the systemizer.
We'll have to get Simon to give us a snow report next time.
Absolutely, yeah.
Mm. ski season.
As Simon was saying at the end of that down the line report, we have a page on the Kempis's Radio website which lists all 10 of the traits. It has links to the 10 audio files. Well, in fact, there's only 7 so far, and it'll be 8 after I put up today's. But eventually, it will house all 10. And the audio files, the interviews for each of the ones will be on there. Plus, the blog that accompanies it is also on there. There's also a link where you can download a free digital copy of the BIG 10 booklet. And there's also a link to a video that is a very interesting video on what the research project is all about. And there's also research data, some of which is free and some of which is payable, but none of it's expensive. No. But it's quite in-depth and conclusive research data that they've used in what has been a very extensive research program. Have a mooch around. That's the best thing. Have a mooch around, see what you can find, because there's some really interesting stuff there. So that was 8 in our series of 10, only 2 more yep. to go. So we're really looking forward to it, and then we'll tie the whole thing together. So big thank you to Dr. Simon Raby and Len Nanjad for the systemizer. We're still getting tweets coming in. We've had a tweet from Tenterton Twilight. That's not easy to say.
No, but that sounds lovely.
Tenterton Twilight. They're a cleaning company in Tenterton, right. Mm-hmm. And they are very highly associated with Tenterton Toilets. If you've seen Tenterton Toilets on the Twitter, which is a very interesting little Twitter handle. But Tenterton Twilight has said, a very good afternoon to you, Vanilla Webb, and the team at Business Bunker. We are enjoying listening to the show. Thank you very much indeed. And also, RAP Office Interiors has tweeted 7 fit-out trends for 2016. So do have a look at that. They've done a link to a blog with the different office fit-out trends that they predict that are coming along in 2016. You can follow them on the Twitter, RAP Office, all one word, RAP Office, and find that tweet, although I have retweeted it, and I'll tweet it again. We've also had a tweet from The Hunting Edge, who say, it was great to be involved in Small Business Saturday, and could you give us a shout-out on the Business Bunker, please? That's The Hunting Edge, The Hunting Edge, .co.uk, and that's from Andrew. Andrew, an absolute pleasure to give you a shout out. I tell you what, Shirley, you've got an email to read, haven't you?
I have, yes.
To read that.
Okay, let's do this one. So this is a date for Thursday this week. That's Thursday the 10th of December, and it's a business community breakfast. It's their last meeting of 2015. So Colin Brown has asked that you try and join them at 7:30 at the Honourable Pilot in Gillingham, where the team are going to look back over the past year and look forward to 2016. And as Colin says here, I'm sure there'll be other topics, problems and news that will arise as usual. It's £8.75 for your breakfast, but that sounds like that's a really good good event. So that's Thursday the 10th at the Honourable Pilot, 7:30 a.m.
Absolutely. I'm trying to catch up with my tweets here. Who have we got? Oh, Jules has been on.
Has she?
Oh, for goodness sake, yeah. Somebody woke her up today. She's talking about, I made reference earlier to walking football.
Yes.
She had to get, even though she's disembodied and not with us here, she had to get the dig in, didn't she? She said, provided you take it slowly and gently at your age, you should be okay.
You wait, she might be buying you some walking sticks for Christmas.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Not the old-fashioned ones, the proper sort of cross-country walking sticks.
Yeah, no, I know, Nordic walking sticks.
Nordic ones,
yeah,
that's the one.
That's the chaps, yeah, absolutely. We've also had a tweet from Caroline and Liz, the Organic Sisters. That's not easy to say either. I did say Organic Sisters. Organic Sisters, or on the Twitter, they're Riverford _ Kent. And they deliver organic goodie boxes and Christmas delights all over, well, most of Kent nowadays, so yep. Do give them a follow. I've got another award winner to tell us about.
Excellent.
And that's the IWSC has named the English Wine Producer of the Year 2015. The International Wine and Spirit Competition has awarded Gusbourne Estate, a Kent grower, as the English Wine Producer of the Year.
That's fantastic. Where's Gusbourne? Where are they based?
They are based in the Weald, not far from me in Tenterton.
Lovely.
And yeah, it's on the Kent-Sussex borders.
Fantastic.
The award was sponsored by Vintners Hall, and the title celebrates the most passionate and committed wine producers in English wine. The announcement follows the continued rise of English wines, showcased by successes earlier this year in the IWSC's Northern Hemisphere results. This saw English wines awarded a record 80 medals. 80 medals. Amongst these great triumphs, Gusbourne Estate was the only English winery to be awarded the IWSC's highest accolade this year, winning 2 IWSC gold medals and 1 gold outstanding.
That's fantastic.
A hat trick. So a fabulous, fabulous well done to the folks over at Gusbourne Estate. We do have some fabulous wine growers and producers.
Is there a web address for them?
I haven't got it here. There is one.
How do you spell Gusbourne?
It's Gusbourne.
Excellent.
Gusbourne.
Yep.
I'll find a website address for them and I'll put it on the Business Bunker show pages later on. I'm happy to do that. We've been joined by another guest in the studio, which is lovely. And we're going to talk to him right now. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the Business Bunker show for the first time, Mr. James Lewis.
Good afternoon.
James is... I'm going to let you explain, but James is running a what's name, called UK Directory App. That's his Twitter handle.
That's right.
And you have just launched it, or just about to launch it?
It's just been launched. It's been out for about 2 weeks maximum. Mm. It's the Twitter feed now has over 800 followers,
right.
So very much appreciative to the people that have taken time to follow. Mm. It's designed to work on the iPhone platform and also the Android platform.
Okay.
It's basically a comprehensive business directory with a little bit more than just a standard business directory. You can search for businesses within a category search. You can also search businesses by a set distance from where you're actually located at the time.
Hmm.
It will give you all the information on that business that's available in the directory. It will also give you a pinpointed map showing you where the business is located. Depending on the phone that you're using, it will give you directions from where you're currently located to the premises,
right.
i.e. if you want to go to a showroom and look at the products. You can phone the company direct from the app. You can also email them. Companies that are providing Twitter and Facebook account details, you'll be able to read those again, also from the app within your hand. So there's no need to... It's literally a fully mobile platform giving you all the resources that you may need to be able to find companies.
Fantastic. Fabulous. And one other thing that you've done is you have an app for channel radio on there as well.
I certainly do. There's a radio player in there, so people will not, you know, if they're out on a train or if they're on a bus and they can't physically get in front of a computer to listen to the show, they are able to listen to the show via the app as well, and it's all real live streaming.
Absolutely fabulous. And funnily enough, you kind of started making it available last week.
Yes.
Because we noticed quite a few listeners on it.
Excellent.
While we were on air, which was absolutely brilliant. So we're really made up for that. And big, big thank you to James and the team at UK Directory
You're
App.
You're most welcome.
It's fabulous. It's a really great app. Do check it out, look at it, and listen to us on it as well.
Absolutely, totally. Yeah. I mean, as time goes on as well, the more people that submit their business details, either via the app or through the website, there is a phone number as well. They can leave a message on an answer phone if a member of staff is not available to take their details.
Mm.
If a category doesn't exist, I've had quite a few people saying to me they'd like to submit their business. Currently there's no category available for the particular business that they run.
Right.
I would say please submit the business, submit the details. It's an ongoing project, it's still quite new, and we will create a suitable category if the submission is reviewed and approved at the time.
Fabulous. Good stuff.
Excellent.
Sounds looking forward to this. It's really cool. Yeah. We're really made up with this. And
what's the Twitter handle, James?
It's at UK Directory App.
UK Directory App, okay?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Cool. I kind of dragged James in and said, right, come and see, because James came to see me about something else and arrived early, so I said, come and talk to us about it. So I kind of dragged him off the street and made him do that. So thank you for doing that, James.
You're most welcome.
I really do appreciate that, and thank you for telling us about the app. And more importantly, thank you for putting channel radio... I can't speak this afternoon. Channel radio on it. It's one of those... It started raining again outside as well. For putting channel radio on there, we really do appreciate it, and we wish you much, much success. We think it's going to be a massive addition to the Kent business place or the UK in general, obviously, but especially down here in Kent.
Okay, thank you
so James, thank you very much for coming in. Thank you for telling us about that. It's all a free download, isn't it, for Android
absolutely.
And iPhone? So go into the App Store?
Yeah,
or?
I've just gone onto Twitter, and right. you've got all the links on there, haven't you?
There is, yeah, there is links on there, yeah.
Fabulous. James, thank you very much for
You're
that.
You're welcome, thank you.
We still got tweets coming in all over the place, and we've got some emails to read, and we've got an FSB News Roundup to do. Len Nanjad, who we heard from just now, has tweeted in all the way from Canada, saying, loving the banter, guys. So thank Excellent. You for that, Len. And we really enjoyed your session. And in fact, this is Ashford, tweeted in, Business Bunker, what an interesting talk from the two big guys today on your show. Absolutely. That'll
Good
be the BIG.
If you weren't there, it would have been three big guys, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. No, thank you for that, and I'm glad you enjoyed it. It's part of a long series, and as I said earlier, if you look under the blog section on Kent Business Radio website, there's a blog which is BIG Insights, and there's a whole set of things there that tells you all about it, gives you loads of free resources and loads of things to download and read about all the traits that we've covered so far, and we've covered eight of them. We've had a tweet from Towers Design. Buy your custom printed Christmas cards before it's too late. towersprinting.co.uk. And that's to the Business Bunker.
Excellent.
And that's young Ben.
I was going to say,
Ben. That is young Ben.
What, the smartest kid?
The Times smartest kid entrepreneur on the planet.
Perfect.
Number one, 17 years of age. Nice one. Get your Christmas cards from him. He sent a nice little picture of a Christmas card. At least, it is a Christmas card. Thank you for that, Ben. Do check that out. We've still got tweets coming. Supply My Business. Supply My Biz on
Martin.
Twitter. Yeah,
yes.
Martin. So, hi, Vanilla Web. Would you remind listeners to make sure they sign up their Kent business with us and start doing business local? Thank you. There you go. You've been reminded. And also, cool blimey, they're coming in thick and fast again. Cascade Insurance. Great to hear you and Shirley today. Missing Jules. No, we're not. We're not missing Jules at all. Yeah. Are we?
Well, I'm not. No, because if Jules was here, I would never seat.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to sit down,
no,
would you?
No. That's right. But no. Jules is off doing exciting things anyway. So.
She is, yeah. Jules is preparing, apparently. She did tell me she was doing it today, but that turned out to be a big whacking fib. She's preparing herself to interview Michael Rue Jr. tomorrow.
Well, I hope she's booked in for lunch.
I bet she has. By prepping, what she's doing is having a long lay down, yeah, and lying in her stomach in preparation for going mad tomorrow. That's what she'll be doing. Anyway, Cascade Insurance, say commercial insurance quotes. They're based in Ashford. If you'd like a quote, give us a call, 01233 840 505. That's 01233 840 505, or follow them on the Twitter, Cascade_INS, Cascade Insurance. Right, so what have we got here? I'm trying to keep up with all of these, surely. Yeah, it's going mad.
I have to say, you're very impressive today, multitasking.
I'm not normally good at that.
No.
But there's loads of things happening. Okay. Anyway, I think it's that time for
Channel Radio. Channel Radio News Update.
Cool. So it's that time in the show where we give a roundup of FSB news and views and events and bits of information that we want to impart. But I want to start off, excuse me, I'm going to cough.
You did.
I want to start off talking about what we got up to, me and you, Shell, what we got
did.
Up to last week over in Dartford.
Thursday night.
The Dartford
time.
Area, we did. Because we were at the Longfield Academy.
We were. And do you know what? It's the first time I've been back at school since I left.
Really?
A long time ago.
It was an interesting day, wasn't it?
It was, actually.
Do you want to set the scene for the listener of what we were up to?
All right. Well, this was the FSB Skills 3030. Mm-hmm. So what the objective was to get some businesses in to interact with what I would call upper sixth.
Yeah.
I think that's
year 13.
13, okay. In the old money. And to... do some networking with them, give them some presentations and stuff like that. So we had 30 students from the Longfield Academy, and some of their other students who were on catering there did us a fantastic lunch.
Wasn't it brilliant?
It was absolutely brilliant.
The chocolate
brownie dessert was to die for. Jules would have been jealous.
I need to express this, because when I was at school, we didn't have classrooms, let alone restaurants like that. I mean, my school lunches consisted of one Woodbine and some chip scratchings. It was a full-blown patio restaurant, wasn't it?
It was. It was very well done.
Umbrellas it was indoors, but it was under umbrellas. It was a lovely venue. The food was superb. The staff were brilliant. The service was brilliant.
It was the students, actually.
And it was all the students.
Had prepared all the food, and they served it as well. So they were all practicing their, you know, silver service skills, etc. But in the afternoon, we had, unfortunately, we didn't have quite as many businesses to support as would have been nice to give the kids. But we did some speed networking. So my learning point from that was to take a whistle next time, because as I'm trying to get everybody to move around the room, there's so much chatter going on.
Yeah.
And the fascinating thing was that the longer the speed networking event went on, the more confidence the students had in being able to explain the experiences that they had, the type of job roles they wanted, and stuff like that. And there was just a phenomenal buzz. The best bit, I think, though, was how much employers learnt about kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, employers are very good at saying, but, you know, teachers don't send the kids out with the right skills and all of those sorts of stuff. But I tell you what, if you're recruiting for attitude, those kids were just brilliant.
Absolutely.
They want to learn. They're desperate to learn and get on. So I had a fabulous day. Couldn't speak afterwards.
No, absolutely.
Lost my voice, but...
It was a brilliant day. There was the other thing we did was we did two workshops.
Yes, we did.
The lovely Lynn did workshops on... interview skills and presentation from that point of view, and Deborah Turner of U Image Consultancy did things on how to improve your image, how to dress for an interview, how to portray yourself, and how to build a brand.
Yeah, she did some great stuff around first impressions.
Exactly. Yeah.
Those types of things. You know.
And which was fabulous, and the students loved it, and it got them set up for the speed networking in the afternoon.
Yes.
As Shelley said, we would have liked a few more businesses. There were about 15, 16 businesses there, I think.
There were. Yeah, we could have done with a few more, and I think actually just having some nice variety from local employers, but for the employers that did give up their time to come and talk to the students, all of them without exception went away having a much better idea about how school leavers were going to fit in, and these kids were ones that had decided not to go to university.
Absolutely.
No, it was a really good day.
So they were looking to enter the workforce or more likely to get apprenticeships.
Yes.
And coming to, but a range of kids with great attitudes and great skills. And I am absolutely not pulling the wool here. There were at least two kids there that I would have actually hired on the spot if I was recruiting right now. They just were employable.
Yeah,
they were,
absolutely.
They got it and they understood it and they were deadly employable. Absolutely.
Very good.
As the FSB, it was our first attempt at something like that. There's a few rough edges that we needed to smooth off. But on the whole, we're quite pleased with how it went. So what we're going to do is template it.
Yes.
We're going to take that and offer it as a package to any school or college that wants it. The reason we're doing 30-30 is, on average, you get about 30 pupils in a year 13. That's where we came up with the numbers.
Yes.
We want some more businesses in different areas to join in with us. It was a great... It was a great way to spend a couple of hours, really informative, really useful. And hey, you're talking to people that could become customers if they don't become employees. So it's really useful from that point of view. So if you run a school, if you're a principal, if you're a head, if you're a teacher, if you're a governor at a school or a college in Kent or Medway, and you'd like to run one of these events, there's no cost involved. We'll organise it all. We'll come and do it. Then get in contact with me at bunker@kentbusinessradio.co.uk and we will organise one in your school or college, and we are going to be rolling them out right around the region over 2016, and we expect it to be quite exciting. So if you want to do it, get in quick, so get your dates sorted out.
Exactly. And I think also we could do with getting some companies now to commit. And
if companies
are going to make a New Year's resolution, then why not make that New Year's resolution to help some of our young people into work? And the support for the Dartford one was brilliant from small businesses.
Yeah.
But actually, not all of those kids want to go into small businesses. Some want to go into, say, banking or larger companies. So we could do with some of those larger companies.
Absolutely.
Too.
And, the whole point about this is what we're trying to do here is bridge the gap between employment and education. And we can't do that if we've only got one side of the equation fitted.
No, and I think that was the great thing. Students had a much better understanding of employers and vice versa.
Absolutely. Right, let's crack on with some news from the FSB then, Shirley. What have you got?
Okay, right. The Department of Business Innovation and Skills has published some guidance for employers about how zero-hours contracts should be used appropriately. The guidance provides examples of best practice, such as clearly advertising that a job role will be under a zero-hour contract and that the hours will not be guaranteed. It also states that late cancellation of work is unacceptable, except in truly unavoidable circumstances. Suggested alternatives to zero-hours contracts outlined in the guidance include offering existing staff overtime, recruiting a part-time employee, or using temporary staff from an agency. And actually, can I add one on there?
Yeah, of course.
Actually, employing a school leaver on an apprenticeship.
Absolutely.
Or taking kids in for internships and all of those types of things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's been a change to the Consumer Rights Act. Retailers will no longer be able to offer repairs instead of refunds in a move described as the biggest reform to shoppers' rights in a generation. As of last month, shoppers are entitled to a full refund up to 30 days from the day of purchase if their item is faulty. As a retailer, you cannot offer to repair it. You have to replace it.
Does that apply to cars? I guess it must.
It must apply to everything because it's in the Consumer Rights Act 2015, and it means customers will no longer need to wait weeks for a repair. And it also covers digital downloads and cars.
Ah, well.
There you go.
Anybody think I'd read it?
That's interesting, isn't it? Because quite often you can end up with a Friday car.
Yes.
And they won't replace it. They'll just take it back and keep trying to fix it. Not anymore.
No.
That is a big move.
That is a big one.
Companies are also prohibited from hiding charges and unacceptable things in the small print as well of a contract. So they've got to be upfront about it. Interesting.
Excellent.
From both points of view, as a consumer, a lot of protection there.
Yes.
If you're a retailer or selling things, you need to think this through. Because there's implications on this.
Okay.
Cool.
The Autumn Statement, I know it's just a little while ago, and for anybody who hasn't heard, there's a £250 million package on the table to find a solution to Operation Stack. Now, for all of the businesses that just had so much trauma through the summer, that's going to be great news. The sad thing is it's going to take just a little while to get it going, I'm sure. And I know that the site hasn't actually been completely finalised yet. But the cash is going to be used to build an off-road lorry park accessing directly from the M20, which can be used whenever the delays occur. So Folkestone and Hythe MP Damien Collins has been driving campaign on this. And he hopes that the days of Operation Stack are coming to an end. So
absolutely.
That's going to be great news.
Absolutely. I happen to have an amendment to that as well.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, because I've been to a few meetings about it with different people, and there are some other things happening as well.
Right.
One of the big problems in Kent, not just with Operation Stack, but it actually occurred during Operation Stack even more, is that there are now rules on how long you can drive. And you have to rest up, yeah?
Yes.
You have your tachograph hours and stuff like that. A lot of the lorry drivers are parking up in residential streets, rural areas, whatever, and just going to sleep in their lorries.
Yes.
That ain't going to happen anymore.
That's good.
They're going to clamp down on that. Yeah. They're going to make them use the facilities that already exist because you've got Ashford 24 and you've got, Service 24 and Ashford.
Stop 24.
Yeah, Stop 24 and Ashford, which are lorry parks specifically for this with facilities.
That's right.
When they build a big new one as well, they are going to make it illegal for lorries to park up in residential streets overnight or, you know, to rest up.
Yeah.
So, and that will make a big, big difference to local people.
It will. So, that's good.
Cool.
Excellent news.
What else you got?
Okay, the FSB has launched a radical new brand.
Woo, woo, woo.
Yes, to reflect the UK's dynamic small business sector. Well, the UK's small business sector is definitely dynamic.
It certainly is.
Exactly. So they're going to launch their new radical new brand alongside a major digital investment to better reflect the UK's small business sector. So the move's intended to enhance the organisation's appeal to the ever-changing makeup of the 5.4 million small businesses that are in the UK. It's also going to make it much easier for smaller businesses to see what the FSB has to offer, streamlining access to its membership services, joining processes and the campaign activity.
Fantastic.
Yep, so that's good. That all follows some research that the FSB did, they found that small businesses greatly value services such as 24/7 legal advice, financial support and employment expertise. So that's good news.
Fantastic. Good stuff. We've still got loads of tweets coming in. But I'll come to them in a minute. There's been a there is an ongoing consultation on the business rates appeals system. The Department for Communities and Local Government has launched a consultation on proposals to improve the appeals system for business rates. A straightforward three-stage appeals process has been proposed, and the consultation is open until the 4th of January 2015. Marcus Jones, who is the Minister for Local Government, said the business rates appeals process has been in a decade-long deadlock. Tell me about it. Hampered by some unscrupulous agents making speculative appeals. That's no way to talk about councils, is it? Sometimes for business businesses unaware this is done on their behalf. You can find out more about what's going on in the appeal, and you can input your thoughts, opinions and ideas by going to www.gov.uk/government/news/Marcus Jones, improving the business rates appeal system. So do check that out if you want to contribute to the debate on business rate appeals.
Excellent. OK, well, HMRC, we love them. Yes, they've just announced a two-year plan to increase the take-up of research and development tax relief among small firms. Now, this is a fantastic tax relief that's available, and a lot of companies don't know about it, but it is really good. Mm. So measures will focus primarily on increasing awareness and making it easier for firms to apply for this type of tax relief. For example, HMRC will publish improved guidance to help firms help increase firms' understanding of this R&D tax relief and provide business certainty through the Advance Assurance Scheme.
Right.
So under this Advance Assurance Scheme, which was launched in November this year, HMRC will assure eligible firms that their first 3 years of R&D tax relief claims will be allowed, open quotes, without inquiry, close quotes.
Wow. Mm. Interesting.
So further information at www.gov.uk/government/news/boost-for-small-businesses.
Absolutely. One of the things about R&D tax credits, I've actually used the system myself and claimed some money back. A lot of businesses really just don't think, they just don't think they're going to be eligible. They go, oh, well, we've not really done anything groundbreaking. It isn't about that. It isn't about reinventing, you know, helicopter cars or stuff like that. There's some very basic stuff that you can use to claim against.
Yep.
Don't write off the fact. I've known all kinds of businesses that have managed to claim quite successfully for research and development they've done in very undynamic fields, for want of a better way of putting
it.
Yeah.
It's one of the government's really great systems, and helps startups as well as existing businesses.
Yeah, and if you want to know, you actually physically get the cash.
You do.
You don't get it written off of your tax bill.
No.
You actually get a check for money. Yep. Real folding stuff, yep. Rodney.
In one of my previous lives, there was a couple of startups which actually managed to survive because they could get R&D tax money back, and that helped them get to their next investment point.
I know many companies that have had in excess of £100,000 back, and it is quite possible. So do make use of that. Do talk to experts in that field about it. People like Rift, for instance, who are specialists in R&D tax credits. Do talk to them about it because they will help.
I've got a couple of dates here.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, business breakfast with Kelly Tolhurst, MP, which is Friday the 22nd of January, 8 a.m. till 9:30 at the Innovation Centre at Medway. And the week before that, Friday the 15th of January, is the business breakfast with MP Tom
Tugendhat.
Thank you very much. You could see I was going to struggle over that one. Mm-hmm. And that's at the Eden Centre, 4 Elms Road, Eden Bridge. So there's two dates for your diary there. A third one here, pension auto-enrolment.
Mm-hmm.
I know businesses are probably a bit fed up with this, but you do need to pay attention to what's happening with this. Tuesday, the 12th of January, that's at 9:30, and that's in Chatham.
Fabulous. And we just want to round off with last Saturday's shenanigans.
Mm.
Last Saturday was Small Business Saturday. FSB, Kent and Medway put a lot of effort into trying to encourage our members and non-members and the public into participating in Small Business Saturday. Our first impressions and the feedback we've had in Kent is that Small Business Saturday was a big success. We've had loads of excellent feedback from small business owners and from shoppers The social and media engagement was absolutely epic.
It was.
We had thousands of tweets, loads, hundreds of thousands of selfies.
Miss Tansy Fox Davis was behind a lot of those, wasn't she?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. She wasn't holding back as
no.
well. She was in Rochester. She went to, because Rochester also had the Dickens Fair as
absolutely.
Well. So we had loads of Dickens Fair type photographs as well. Yeah, no, absolutely. One of the big things that a lot of people told us, a lot of shoppers told us, they were surprised about the range of goods and produce and the quality of the goods and produce on sale by small independent providers and small market stores. Absolutely. We've been telling you this for a long time.
Yep.
Get out
Absolutely.
There. Get out of the big superstores and look at some of the small farmers markets, street markets, small independent shops in our high streets.
Yeah. I'm really lucky because I live just outside of Lenham and we have the square there. So we've got a butcher's, a greengrocer's, a baker's, a small... sort of convenience store, all of that sort of stuff. And it's brilliant. I can just go in on a Saturday morning, go to the butcher's, buy the meat, the bread, all of those sorts of things. Great.
Absolutely. And we were supported, and I need to give a big shout out, by some of Kent's MPs who did a fabulous job coming round with us and visiting lots of shops and market stalls and having their pictures taken and everything. And I want to say a huge, huge thank you to the following MPs that came out with us. Kelly Tolhurst, Tom Tugendhat, Greg Clark, Damien Green, Charlie Elphick, Helen Grant and Tracy Crouch, who all spent their Saturday supporting small businesses in the county of Kent and Medway. Thank you so much. We really do appreciate it. And I'd just like to say a personal thank you to Debbie from Revivals and her team from the Canterbury Independent Traders Association for the work they did in Canterbury. Thank
Good
you
job.
So much for that. It was an absolute pleasure. And Small Business Saturday was a rip-roaring success, as far as I'm concerned.
It was. That's cool. Become a good annual fixture, actually.
Absolutely.
And a great time of year to have it, because people going to the independent shops, finding something new and quirky for Christmas presents, brilliant.
Absolutely. Absolutely perfect. Right, we're coming towards the end of the show. I need to tell you what's coming up on Channel Radio later today. At 4 o'clock, we have the lovely Nathalie Beneig with Kent Creative Live. That's at 4 p.m. And then at 5 p.m, we have Mr. Stripey Socks himself, the ladies' favourite, Mr. Craig Avery, with his entertainment show. And that is followed at... Welcome on to the New Potato Show. 7 p.m, Mr. Jamie Andrews with 18 unsigned tracks of new music. Following Jamie at 9 o'clock, we have I Was Lord Kitchener's Valet, a 1960s comedy programme, and then we round off the evening with...
It's Club Culture with Boy George.
One, two, three, get down!
Full drum beat and a squidgy bass, I give you Vanilla Ace, and it rhymes. That means I'm right on time. Welcome to Club Culture, where I control my very own dance universe. 1 hour or more of grooving delectables for your disco pleasure. I'm Boy George.
It's 1 hour of delectable, delicious dance music. It's Club Culture with Boy George on Channel Radio.
So that's our lineup for the rest of Tuesday, December the 8th on Channel Radio. We hope you stay tuned and listen to some of our other great shows. But I'd like to wrap up today's show by saying a huge thank you to today's show sponsor, Active Enrolments. To our guests, Mr. Alex Waterton of F Keys. To Dr. Simon Raby and Len Nanjad. Simon of Think Big Associates. And Len is from Core International, I think they're called, in Canada. Thank you to them. A last-minute dragon guest, James Lewis of UK Directory App. Thank you for joining in. I'd also, I meant to tell you at the end of the bit I did on Small Business Saturday, if you go to Supply My Biz, Supply My Business, and they've got a blog up about Small Business Saturday. They do have a read of that. It's a really interesting blog. You can find their full link by going to the Kent Business Radio website and clicking on their big logo, which is on the front of our site. So do follow up with that. So a huge thank you to everybody. Jules will probably be swanning back next week to join us if she can get up in time. And we'll look forward to that. But in the meantime, thank you to everybody that emailed, tweeted, rang, and everything else to talk to us. We really do appreciate it. Alex's quiz is going to be closing soon, so you've got your last chance to kind of win a free bag, a free place on one of Alex's seminars, so do that. Another thing I needed to tell you about. RAP Office have got some desk pedestals. They've got 10.
Struggled with that, yep.
Yeah, they've got 10 new desk pedestals that the customer bought and paid for but now doesn't want. They're brand new. If anyone in Kent wants one or 10, if you rock up at their office and pick them up, you can have them for nothing. And they're good quality ones. I've tweeted it out. Have a look at my timeline to see them, or tweet RAP Office to find out more about it. But you've been listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the delightful Shirley Mansfield on the Business Bunker Show. We will be back with you next week. Have a good week.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.